If you are having a tough time getting to the kitchen quickly, you know, if you're playing somebody that's a big server and a big drive and you feel like you're kind of getting caught in that transition zone, don't be afraid to hit a higher cross-court return. Because of that extra 5 feet of space, because of the geometry of the court, and because they have to let the return bounce, that high cross-court return is going to be in the air for quite a while, and I've kind of been experimenting with it. And actually yesterday, I was able to hit a high cross-court return, but I was able to basically walk up to the kitchen by the time that their third shot got to where I was. So I'm not saying that you're going to want to walk up to the kitchen, but just don't underestimate how much time you can give yourself with a high cross-court return, because if that ball is going this high over the net and cross-court and you don't hit it hard, it will be in the air for a long time. They have to let it bounce. They're making contact with it behind the baseline. By the time they can get that third shot to you, you'll be well established at the kitchen, and don't be afraid to hit a higher return.
For over 10 years, innovation has been at the core of who we are at Selkirk. We take risks, we test, we evolve. Introducing the Selkirk Lab 007. With an Infinigrid surface that lasts at least 3 times longer than rock carbon, and a titanium mesh layer for added power, while maintaining the largest sweet spot available. Because good is never good enough.
All right, so thank you guys for watching another episode. This is actually my first episode back from Tokyo. So I've slept 3 hours in the last probably 72 hours. And I didn't really want to do this podcast, but Josh was like, James, the people need you. That's not what happened. Anyway, we'll just get into it. So actually, I was just in Tokyo. I was teaching a lot of people that were a little newer to the game and hadn't really had the experience of getting coaching before, really, because it's just, you know, I would say Japan is the equivalent of where the U.S. was maybe 10 to 15 years ago in pickleball. So there are people playing, but it's not as developed as it is here. And one of the things that they, I guess, had been taught or they thought was the case was that you should just kind of make the serve and the return, especially the return. You know, they thought that you should never miss the return. And there was a few people who had said that to me, like, you don't want to miss the return because you lose a point. You know, it's almost, I guess, easier or more accepted to miss a serve than it is a return, because if you miss a serve, you don't technically lose a point as long as you're not playing rally scoring pickleball. And most people play side out scoring, obviously, at the rec level. And I am completely of the belief, and if you watch the pro game or even the 5-0 game, I would say hitting hard returns, hitting hard and deep returns is a complete game changer. You know, the most important part of pickleball in general is getting to the kitchen. That is everything. And as you get up in level, you'll notice the one constant is that the ability to get to the kitchen line gets better and better. There are things that vary. You know, there are 3-5s with better overheads than 5-0s. There are a lot of things, like, you know, there are 4-0s that hit harder than pros sometimes. There are, you know, there's a lot of different, a lot of variance, you know, all over the game. But I would say the one thing that's definitely a constant is that getting to the kitchen is something that gets better at every level, and the pros get to the kitchen the best by a lot. And I think that that is probably the most important part of the game, getting up to the kitchen. And the hardest part of getting up to the kitchen is when somebody hits a really hard return to you. And I would say that's the, you know, for me, if I miss one return a match, I'm not really worried about it. If I'm hitting my return hard, if I'm going for it, that's a huge deal, especially if you're somebody that likes to be aggressive with your fourths. You know, if you've got power and if it's up here and you can put the ball away, if you're somebody that's a more powerful player and you feel like you can finish points or even just put a lot of pressure on fourths, hitting a hard, aggressive return is crucial. And I would say that's especially the case, actually, at the lower levels. You know, there's some things that I say that are maybe more relevant to players that are of a higher level. But this one, hitting the return hard, is, I think, even more important as you go down in level, because players are less well-equipped to get to the kitchen line when facing a hard return. They have a tougher time getting to the kitchen. So if they're already having a difficult time getting to the kitchen, if you can hit a hard, deep return and pin them back, I think it's something that can take the control of the match. So, yeah, I think that's huge. Hitting the return hard, don't be afraid to miss. And if you feel like you're missing some returns long, you can go cross court. Keep in mind that from one corner to the next cross court, basically the baseline to that baseline is about 5 extra feet than if you go from this baseline to down the line baseline. And yeah, that's what I choose to do. And another thing quickly on returns, if you are having a tough time getting to the kitchen quickly, you know, if you're playing somebody that's a big serve or in a big drive and you feel like you're kind of getting caught in that transition zone, don't be afraid to hit a higher cross-court return. Because of that extra 5 feet of space, because of the geometry of the court, and because they have to let the return bounce, you know, that high cross-court return is going to be in the air for quite a while. And I've kind of been experimenting with it and just doing some, you know, little experiments in practice for fun. And actually yesterday I was able to hit a high cross court return, maybe I think it was 6 feet over the net and landed very deep. It was, you know, a very high quality, high cross court return, but I was able to basically walk up to the kitchen by the time that their third shot got to where I was. So I'm not saying that you're going to want to walk up to the kitchen, but just don't underestimate how much time you can give yourself with a high cross court return. Because if that ball is going this high over the net and cross court and you don't hit it hard, which you can't really hit it that hard if you hit it high, it will be in the air for a long time. They have to let it bounce. They're making contact with it behind the baseline. By the time they can get that third shot to you, you'll be well established at the kitchen. And don't be afraid to hit a higher return.
We are Selkirk. We are pickleball.
Pickleball?
Yeah, pickleball.
All ages, family, friends, dinks, drives, Ernie's, ATPs, and whatever this is. 10 years in and just getting started. Here and not going anywhere. We are you, and you are who we work for. Family owned, USA made, pickleball proud. Selkirk Sport, we are pickleball.
If some people say, oh, I popped up my return, you know, you don't want to pop it up. I don't really think that's something to worry about if you can hit it deep. Hitting a short return is something you should be more concerned with. But if it's high and deep, maybe they can hit a decent drive, but you'll be at the kitchen line by the time they're making contact with that ball. A high, deep return gives you so much time to get up there. And after all, if they can drive it hard enough for you to have an issue when they're, you know, all the way back at the baseline and you're up at the kitchen fully prepared, that's more of a you problem, probably. I think if they have the ability to overpower you with a drive when they're behind the baseline, I think then you might, you know, need to watch a podcast of mine on a preparation with the padlock fourths, which if that is the case, I can point you in the right direction. So yeah, that's the main thing there. One other thing that I noticed too, player communication on third shots is super underrated. I think if you watch the pro game, it happens a lot more often where, you know, somebody hits a higher drop, they'll say, watch, you know, hi, something like that to their partner to alert their partner that they've hit a high drop. I think that helps a ton. And I think you should be kind of dialed in and attuned with what your partner is doing when they hit the drop, how it looks off their paddle. That seems to be the most underrated thing that I am witnessing at the probably 4-0 level or so. It just doesn't seem like a lot of players are watching their partner's drop with intention. Like for me, when I'm playing, I'm watching my partner's drop, or there's, you know, even if they're driving it, whatever third shot or reset that they're hitting, I'm very aware of what it looks like. Is it a little high? Is it perfect? And if it looks perfect, I'll get right up to the kitchen and I'll try to be a menace and try to crash. And if it doesn't look good, I'll take a step back. If it looks really bad, I'll take a few steps back. And you want to be aware of that stuff, because it's funny, like, it's not necessarily your partner's fault if they hit a not perfect drop and then you moved forward and tried to crash off of a not great drop and then you got crushed with it and you say, oh, my partner hit a bad drop. Well, it's also your responsibility to be very aware of the shot that they are hitting. And I think it starts with communication. I think if you see that your drop's good, say good. And if you see that your drop's high, say hi. You know, you're allowed to talk to your partner in the middle of a point. Take advantage of it. So those are the main things there. I think crashing drops is another thing we should probably talk about. When you're crashing drops, I highly, highly recommend to be dropping to the inside foot of the right side player. That's one of those things where, you know, you almost always want to hit the third shot to the person that's coming in, and or the middle, right? Middle or person coming in. But I think crashing off of a drop with topspin, that's another thing. crash off of topspin drops. Don't crash off of slice drops too often. I rarely crash off of a slice drop because it balances, it kind of sits up, and if it's not perfect because of spin continuation, if your opponent takes that ball out of the air, you know, let's say if they take your partner's slice drop out of the air with topspin and try to flick it, they're going to get a ton of topspin on it. They could hit it very hard to keep it in. Not a great situation to be crashing off of it. But if your partner ended a topspin drop to the inside foot of the right side player, make them go like this while they're lifting. I've seen a ton of pop-ups at the rec level happen there. I've been kind of aware of what's going on at the rec level because I'm teaching all these clinics like a crazy person. And that seems to be the biggest cause of pop-ups off of fourths is somebody hits a topspin drop to the inside foot of the right side player, whether they're the person that's established at the net already or whether they're the person that was returning and coming in. Whatever it is, that inside foot of that right side player, as long as they're right-handed, if they've got a one-hander, normally, because it's a drop, it's got a lot more inertia, some weight behind it that is coming towards them. It's balancing. It's going to balance a little higher than some, you know, a dink, for example. And then that right side player will try to short hop it if it bounces and pop it up way, way more often than you would expect. So keep that play in mind. Top spin drop to the inside foot of the right side player, as long as they're right-handed, and then crash off of it. You might get some pop-ups. I bet you will if done correctly. So yeah, we actually just went to Tokyo. That's why I'm so tired. I can't sleep on planes. They got us a full flat flight, so it was like a awesome flight and I couldn't sleep. But if you have any questions about this podcast, reach out in the comments. I'll give you a quick Tokyo story. If you're only interested in coaching, then you can tune out. If you're interested in a funny, probably keep it 3 minutes or less, this short Tokyo story, so I can go to bed. But it was so funny. So we had this reception where I gave a speech. There was a big tournament there in Japan. Had to be, I don't even know, maybe 1,000 players almost that came all over Asia and Australia and different places. And they were playing the tournament. And then I guess as one of the, you know, on the flyer of the tournament, one of the headlining things, it was you can take a clinic with James. And I was there with Max Freeman, my sister, and Ryan Fu. So four PPA pros teaching a clinic. A pretty cool, fun opportunity. I mean, they're super overqualified to be my assistant coaches, obviously. And we had 150 signups for the clinic. It was a great, huge turnout. And we had this reception thing. One of the nights, I guess, in between the clinics, we didn't have a clinic that day. And this reception thing was there for a lot of just regular people in Tokyo. And most of them, I would say almost all of them, didn't have any idea who I was. But there was one pickleball court there, maybe two. And this was not the site. This was off-site, just a reception thing. I gave a speech to the people of Japan saying, hey, you know, play pickleball. And then after it, I went and I wanted to practice on one of the courts with Max Freeman. And there were just some rec players playing. And they didn't know who I was. No way, a few of them. And we just got started playing. And Max and I were like, you know, it'd be fun to just play against him instead of just drill with each other. So instead of drilling with each other, we decided to just play against him and just go 100%. And these guys were like maybe, I don't know, 4-0s maybe. And we decided to just go 100%. And with whatever the little Japanese that we knew, we decided to start talking some trash and just talking trash in Japanese. All right, so we went in with just the random Japanese words that we had learned, like with for like trash talk and stuff. And we just started going, you know, as hard as we possibly could, hitting our shirts as hard as we could. And they were just like completely shocked and just had no idea what was going on. They'd never seen anything like this and they were going crazy. And then they started telling their friends, I guess, like getting on the phone, like, you know, I didn't really understand what they were saying, but something to the effect of like, hey, you got to check this out. And they brought, you know, next thing you know, 30 minutes in, there's like almost 100 people watching Max and I just beat up on Japanese rec players. And some of them were asking like, hey, like, what? How are you so good? Like, and you know, I guess a few of them had seen from the reception, they had heard that I was a pro. I don't really know. Some of them were like, dude, like, who are you? Like, are you like, how are you so good? I'm like, oh, I don't know. I just kicked it up. Like Max and I just started playing last month, you know, just totally messing with them. And they were like, what? Like, no way. And yeah, we got some video footage of the matches, but it was just hilarious. Like, and we were they were telling us like what to say, like different phrases that we should say in Japanese as like trash talk. and then, or like just anything to say. And then they were asking me, like, you know, what do you say in the U.S. when you're playing? And I was like, I don't know. I just made something up that I had heard at the last tournament. You know, people saying they were dialed. I like to say that too. Like, oh, I'm dialed in. And so I was saying, you know, in the United States, you say you're dialed. And they were like, oh, I'm dialed. Okay, I get it. And then they all just started saying it. And I thought it was hilarious. Like, they're all just, you know, they don't speak really any English outside of that. And they're just saying, like, I'm dialed. And then the next day, I go to the courts, the other courts, the exhibition courts, and they didn't even see me. This is totally candid, because I see them from, like, you know, behind a fence, behind a, it's like kind of a covered situation. And I see this kid hit a winner, like a winner overhead, and he's like, I'm dialed. And then they're all just like laughing, and they're all just saying that they're dialed. So I think I might have started some sort of trend in Japan. Like, I don't know what just happened, but people after I told them, like, people were saying I'm dialed all weekend. So if you go to Japan, you see people saying that they're dialed, just know where it started, right here. That's all. Thanks for watching.